Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
This episode is brought to you by Short-Term Rental Listing Advice. Join this Facebook group and post your listing to get advice from other hosts, including myself, on how you can improve your listing. Or just post your property so you can show off. Join us at strlistingadvice.com. That's strlistingadvice.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Today, we're going to take a little break from the actual real estate investing and talk about our personal relationships with money. So we have Lisa Chastain from the Real Money Podcast to help us understand all those things, talk about all things personal finance. How's it going, Lisa?
Awesome. So grateful to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. So can you start by telling our audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm on a mission primarily for women to be the financial leaders of the world, honestly, transparently. And we get to do that together. Men and women get to partner up together so that women can be financial powerhouses and men can be financial powerhouses. That's my mission. I do that through a set of money mindset, helping people have a healthy relationship with money, have a healthy relationship with debt. I help people get clear about what their personal financial goals are and help them create systems in their lives to win. And with that comes all kinds of personal financial advice, systems, tools that go along with that. I was a financial advisor, got out of that space, full-time money coach, loving what I do.
Awesome. So you said personal financial goals. So let's start there, because you can't do anything unless you know what your goals are. I mean, I guess you could do a lot of things, but you can't effectively take the right steps if you don't know what your personal financial goals are. And I think if you ask that question to a lot of people, they're like, oh, to be financially independent. So what would be your response to that in terms of getting to that point? What are the things we have to implement to be able to get to that very nebulous, off in the future, getting there?
Yeah. First, the very first thing that anybody needs to do is get out of the should box and stop shooting all over themselves. And listen, you and I are both in different ways a part of the financial industry, giving financial support and advice and knowledge and wisdom and conversations that are important. But we have a tendency as human beings to look out and look at what other people are doing and think that that's what we should be doing financially. Short-term rentals are included in that box of, I think I should do this because I think it will make me money. Get out of the should box and get into a conversation of what kind of life do I want to live and how much money does that take? And that takes you having the courage to ask questions more specifically about where you're headed in life, and then how much is going to cost to get you there. And then you choose different vehicles to get there.
What would be an example of a vehicle to get there? So let's come up with like an example. So say I want to invest in real estate and I need to save $50,000 to get there. So what sorts of things should I be doing? Or do we need to come up with more example pieces of my life?
Right. So that's usually where people start with goals, is they set this financial goal of, I want to have this amount. I want to do this thing. I say we have to get it more personal than that. And it starts with honestly looking at the end of your life. What do you want to be able to say about your life at the end? And none of us know when that's going to be.
That is true.
For us in my household, my husband is still working a 9-to-5 while he has a W-2. And he says, I want to be retired. I want to be able to have the option to leave by 55. Not that I will, but I want to have the option to leave by 55. And for everybody, it's different. Let's make it personal of like, what do you want your life to look like and feel like and by when? So freedom is a buzzword in finance and it's too big. It's too big of a word. Well, what does freedom look like and feel like to you? And then how much is that freedom going to cost? And then we choose the right investment vehicles to get there. Some people want to leave their jobs tomorrow. Okay, cool. So if you want to replace your income, that's a more specific kind of goal. I want to replace my income in 3 years or by next week. Well, how much money do you need to get there? And in my world, most people don't know their personal financials that well. And you got to know what your life costs you and what your life is going to cost you so you can get the right investment vehicles for that.
I think where I see a lot of people make big mistakes when they talk about financial independence and doing this too early and the quitting the job tomorrow thing is people will quit their jobs in their 20s. I quit my job in my 20s. But what they don't think about is that life gets more expensive. So if you're good at 25 on $50,000 a year, if you have kids, I mean, that's pretty obvious. Things get really incredibly expensive. But even if you decide not to have kids, your life is still going to get more expensive. I require more comfort at 35 than I did at 25. I was okay with living in a kind of shitty apartment and, moving around. There's things that I'm not okay with at 35 that I was totally cool with at 25 and happy with it and thought I'd be cool with it forever. So can you kind of speak to that about the getting a little off track in that way with the big word of freedom and not really drilling down and looking at what steps it's going to take to get there and figuring out what it costs today and what it might cost later?
There's a whole lot loaded into that question. So let me just start with your personal vision to that point. What we need at 25 is not what we want at 35. I think that's what you were trying to, you said simply, right? Where you're at 25 is not where you want to be at 35, and it's not where you want to be at 45. So you have to ask the question, how long will this money last and how far will it take me? And with real estate, we know with the short-term rental market, it's volatile, it fluctuates. So how am I continuing to grow my portfolio in a way that I can sustain and build into my lifestyle? It's very short-sighted to say, well, I'll just live in this apartment forever at 25, right? But building wealth is all about building your net worth. And there's lots of ways to do that so that you have whatever kind of freedom it is that you need and want. But money doesn't last forever. And you need a strategy to make sure that if you're going to stop working a 9-to-5 at the age of 25, that you're going to have income, you're going to have a portfolio that's growing with you and your lifestyle. I think of it like Pac-Man, you know, where you have to constantly be like going after certain things as Pac-Man. And in real estate, I feel like that's the same thing.
Yeah. Getting into and out of deals and working through that. So yeah. What are some other investment vehicles that you've kind of sort of mentioned as we've been talking that might help to get you to that place, that bigger, more nebulous place of financial independence?
There are so many different kinds of investing tools and strategies. So if someone, let's just say, I'm going to put some real numbers to this because I think that's helpful.
Okay.
If someone's lifestyle today costs them $10,000 a month net to be able to pay their bills and have the spending money and the travel money that they want and need, but with kids, you have kids?
Oh yeah. Two.
I have kids too, right? So I have a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old, and who knows if they're going to go to college, who knows what kind of money they're going to need and want. We have to look at all the goals that we have. And if our life costs us $10,000 today, we know for sure it's going to cost us more than that in 10 years and 20 years. So you have to build and diversify a portfolio that can yield that kind of income. So talking about short-term rentals, how many rentals, what kind of income do you need not only to sustain the business and the business model and the taxes that come with that, but also to be able to pay yourself for a very extended period of time. And also not just rental income, however that shapes out. Are you investing in the stock market? What kind of strategy do you have in place to diversify your portfolio? Because everybody saw what happened in 2008, and that sucked for a lot of people that were in real estate. I was a part of the REIT market before that. We all saw what happened with the REIT market before that. So we need to make sure that you've got money in different places, college funds, mutual funds, insurance. Life insurance policies are pretty decent, but it's all with the specific vision and question of how is it going to last and accumulate with me?
Okay.
And so I can, you know, if you have questions about like specifically what are your listeners, what are they thinking about? What do they want to know?
So usually what our listeners are doing, they either are trying to buy their first investment property, or maybe they already own a few and they're working towards building their portfolio income-wise through their real estate investments in order to be able to, it's not always necessarily to quit a job, but you know, to have that extra income, whether it's to kind of build a fortress around their job for retirement or to be able to have help to cover the cost of taking care of an elderly parent. So anything kind of along those lines of like side hustle type deals. But a lot of people are looking to quit their jobs and be full-time real estate investors.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I always ask the question with my coach's hat on, for what purpose? For what purpose? Because if it's just to make money and you're just chasing the money, at some point that's going to get real old. You got to make sure that you know that you really like that kind of business and that you can withstand the volatility that comes with it and that you've got the cash flow that not only supports your lifestyle, but also supports the business that you have and you can bob and weave with the market.
I think that's a really important call out too, is making sure that you know and like the business, because if you start buying a few of these things and then you decide you don't like it, you don't like dealing with people, you don't like maintaining houses, you know, any of the facets that go along with being a real estate investor, that's going to kind of suck. Like, you're probably going to have to, if you need to get out of them, you're going to have to probably go back and get your job again. So you do need to make sure that you like what you're building your financial independence around.
Yeah. I was on a plane with a guy who is just getting ready to retire out of the military, and he and his wife are starting to build rental properties in North Carolina. And they've accumulated 5 or 6 properties at this point. And it's work. He's going in, he's flipping the houses. He's then making sure that there's renters in the house. It's one thing to have an idea. It's another thing to know how you're going to execute it and the real work that's involved. Because I don't, if you're considering in this moment jumping into this industry in this market, let's make sure that it's going to fit for you and you have the ability to grow with it. And you truly understand, which is why I love your podcast. You truly understand what it's going to take for you to be successful.
This episode of The Short-Term Show has been brought to you by your friendly short-term shop real estate agent. We are hyper-local and totally dedicated to your success. Whether you want to buy your next short-term rental or sell the one you currently own, we would be honored to earn your business. We are in all of the best vacation markets in America. Find us at theshorttermshop.com. That's theshorttermshop.com. Brokered by eXp. This episode is brought to you by the premier short-term rental Facebook group, Short-Term Rental Long-Term Wealth. We have nearly 50,000 members. This is the biggest independently owned and operated SCR Facebook group, and it has been curated by yours truly, Cashflow Carl. Join us on Facebook. Search the groups for Short-Term Rental Long-Term Wealth. That's Short-Term Rental Long-Term Wealth on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's talk about some of the other types of investment vehicles. So we've talked about real estate. We talk about real estate a lot here, but let's talk about things like stocks, because that's something that, I'll be honest with you, I don't do. I have no idea how to do them. I'm really good at going and buying a house that's going to make money and managing that well. But I think there's probably, you know, a lot of people, a lot of our listeners who might be in the same boat who want to diversify a little bit and maybe put some money elsewhere besides just real estate, but they don't really know where to start and what to look at and how to do those things.
Okay. Passive income is one piece of the puzzle. Building passive income is awesome. And I also know a lot of people who have lost their asses in real estate because the only investments they had were in real estate. So if you are generating revenue from a property in a couple of ways, you're earning equity, and then also a renter's paying you, whether that's a short-term rental or a long-term rental, and you can take that money and not just spend it, not just save it in cash, which realtors and people in real estate are pretty guilty of just accumulating cash, and they've got all this cash. Well, you can get a return on investment of that cash. Cash loses value over time. And I'm sure you've had these conversations on the show before, but I don't know specifically this will land with somebody, is that you're going to lose cash if you're just stockpiling it, waiting for the next investment. And I have a client like this where her husband is just sitting on hundreds of thousands of dollars of cash, just waiting for the next right investment. Well, while it's sitting there, you can do stuff with it. You don't have to lock it into a retirement account, and you can't anyway, but it could be sitting in a high yield savings account right now, which is great. We're getting great returns on that, 4 to 5%. That's going to earn on itself over time. Park it in, you know, make sure you're FDIC insured under $250,000. You don't want to park it all in one bank necessarily, but you can diversify that. Put some over here, put some over there, at least have it earning something. And you can buy stock. I would recommend that if that's the choice that you make, that you do your due diligence on learning how to invest in different stock, learning how to invest in different mutual funds, and understand the difference between short-term gains and capital gains. There's a game to play, just like in real estate with stocks. But it's pretty easy now to start investing in stocks. We've got lots of apps for you to start putting money away and saving in stocks. But I know it's great that your show is the short-term shop, but also don't just play a short-term strategy with money. Play a longer-term strategy with money and make sure all your money is working for you as you're bringing it in. There's also tax vehicles. If you're making a lot of money, you want to make sure that you're putting money away in a place potentially so that you're not paying it all to the IRS, making sure you're investing there. I don't know to what extent you talk about setting up different LLCs and different ways that you can put different rentals and different properties into your LLCs so you can expense some of those things and becomes less burdensome on paying taxes. There's mm-hmm. lots to talk about there. Make sure you have a strategy no matter what though. Don't just play the short-term game financially.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about, we have had some attorneys and several CPAs on to talk about, do you need an LLC for every property, or, you know, how to structure those things. So I'd love to hear from your perspective as a money coach, what your thoughts are there.
I think the biggest thing is protection. You want to protect yourself and you want to structure your properties in a way that there's a separation between you and the business of running short-term rentals. Having one property that you own, putting it in an LLC protects you, creates that. Now, of course, people can pierce the corporate veil, but that at least gives you a layer of protection to say, no, this is a business and I'm running it as a business. So if something were to happen, you have the right insurance and protection in place. So the LLC would support you with that. And then as you continue to grow, you can have an LLC that you file as an S corp, which also helps you save on taxes. You can put yourself on payroll. There's a lot that you can do to legitimize the structure of the business that you have, which helps with taxes and also protects you. And I'm a big proponent of that you make sure you have the right attorney on your team, because especially with short-term rentals and other kinds of rentals, you have renters. I'm in Vegas. They can get pretty wild. I've heard behind the scenes with my clients the kind of conversations they're having. And as always, if you're going to do something, let's make sure that you have the protection in place that you need. Do you have more specifics you want to talk about when it comes to that? I mean, I'm definitely not I usually always bring in my estate planning attorneys and my different attorneys to help a client and advise them on what action to take to make sure they're protected. But if you're bringing in a ton of cash, you want to make sure that you have it all in the right places. Again, for what purpose? What's the end game? Having a lot of money just for the sake of having a lot of money, like I said, for a lot of people, that's not going to keep you in the game. At some point, you'll get bored.
Yeah. And I mean, that's usually the point in the conversation where we say, but ask your attorney or ask your CPA, because we don't want to, get into that lane too far. So let's talk about your stop budgeting system. So, you're helping people, you're a money coach, you're helping people to not have that, you know, super oppressive, restrictive budgeting feeling that I have certainly had at several points in my life when I was saving for my first rental. So I'd love to hear more about that and what you recommend instead of that really restrictive budgeting.
Okay. So the people that come to me specifically are people that self-identify as not having a healthy relationship with money. They have a lot of fear, a lot of scarcity. I have business owners who are clients who are running multi-million dollar companies who come to me and they are off. They don't have the results that they want. And even if they do, how they feel about their money is not supporting them. They're stressing a lot about it and they're making arbitrary decisions based on, like I said, that should box, because they've listened to an expert and the expert has told them that they have to do certain things with their money. Otherwise, they're idiots. We've all heard those conversations. So if you don't have a healthy relationship with money, the last thing that you need is a budget. And that's the start of the conversation I have with my clients, is if you do not have a healthy relationship with money, a budget is not going to fix that. It is a great tool. I have clients who have budgets who come to me, who don't use them, who ignore them. And that's because of their relationship with money. That's because of maybe they think they have to do it a certain way, but they don't.
Gotcha.
So for me, with my NLP background, it's a pattern interrupt to say, well, then fuck it. Stop it. Let's talk about what will get you the result that you want. Let's talk about healing your relationship with money. And you got to get in relationship. So how do I do that? Well, I'm going to ask you to look at your money, but in a very simple way, because there's a lot of people that spend a lot of time avoiding it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do we determine, what if you think, okay, I think my relationship with money is decent, but how do we determine if we have a bad or a good or a in between relationship with money?
I think the most relatable way that I teach that is through my money personalities, because every money personality, there's five that I teach. Robin Crane came up with this. She's one of my best friends, but there's five money personalities that we teach. And with each money personality, there are strengths and weaknesses. So you can learn what your money personality is. What are your beliefs with money? And are you behaving in alignment with your beliefs? Or are your beliefs holding you back? If you're spending more time stressing about money, even if you have a lot of it, you do not have a healthy relationship with money. If you're hoarding your money and you're just playing Monopoly and you're just trying to like hoard all that money and get Park Place,
yeah,
you do not have a healthy relationship with money. Yeah, so even though people might have a lot of money, that doesn't mean that they're living their best life. And for me, that's the connection right there. Do you wake up every day in love with your life? Do you love the people that you're with? Do you love the way that you spend your time? Are you making a difference and impact the way that you envision it to be? And if the answer is no to those things, you are off track in your relationship with money.
Okay. So just because you have a lot of money in the bank and you aren't spending all of it doesn't mean you have a good relationship with money.
Totally not. Totally not. Because there tends to be, having been in the money industry the last 10 years, a ton of judgment, a ton of shame, and a ton of control that comes along with that conversation.
How does, if you've got a lot of money in the bank, what is that shame? Where does that come in?
I had a really great conversation with my friend JM. I don't know if you've met JM, but I was on his podcast a few weeks ago, and he grew up in Montana, I believe, and he didn't grow up around a lot of money. And that for him was the start of the conversation of, well, I need more of it. And there's never going to be enough. I need more of it. There's never going to be enough. And also a limiting belief that that money was bad, because in Montana, which there's a ton of money in Montana, his family would drive around and be like, oh, look at that big house. Look at those rich people. They're horrible people, or rich, you know, whatever those limiting conversations are, rich people are fill in the blank. And I know I didn't grow up around money. And I was also subjected to, well, money's not going to make you happy. That's a belief system. So when he started making seven figures, it was a trigger for him of that shame that people with money are bad. But there was never going to be enough money, he was on this hamster wheel of accumulating money, never really connected to how money can bring joy and happiness into his life. And his life fell apart. In his own words, he almost lost his marriage because of this hamster wheel of, I have to have more money, but then money's bad. And that caused a lot of drinking. It's a very common story, unfortunately, of how having a lot of money can also be rubbing up against a value system or belief system that's not healthy And we got to break through that in order to be in relationship in a healthy way with our money. So having money in and of itself is not, it doesn't solve all our problems.
Okay. Well, that's really insightful that could, just because you have it doesn't mean you're comfortable or happy with it.
Yes, exactly. And on the other side, there is some shame with people that have a lot of money that money shame comes with, I have more than others and I'm ashamed of that. And that doesn't feel good. And because I have more than others, I'm not going to celebrate that or give myself permission to enjoy it. Uh-huh. It's a wormhole.
There's a lot of psychology going on here. Okay. Awesome. Well, I don't even really know where to go from there because that just was so like, I've never thought about it like that. End podcast, drop mic. So I think that probably a lot of people were like, oh yeah, you know, maybe that's me. Are there any other mindsets that you see on a regular basis that kind of hinder people from getting to that good relationship with money?
Yeah. So there's the scarcity mindset. There's the judgmental conversation. We're out there judging people all the time. And ultimately what we're doing is we're judging ourselves. And that's not helping anybody. I have, I think there's a good example in the money personalities of two different, very different kinds of money personalities that shows up in real estate a lot.
Okay. What are those? I'm interested to hear.
Yeah. So Dave Ramsey, he talks about the saver and the spender. So similar, totally different ways of being with money. So in our world, we say this is the cheap chip over here, and this is the spendthrift Sally over here. And like I said earlier, there's no wrong way to be with money. All the money personalities have strengths and weaknesses. The cheap chip is someone who gravitates to the money industry. We have a lot of financial advisors that are cheap chips. We've got a lot of people in the finance industry because these are people in their lane. If their strength are very analytical, they like data, they like numbers, and they like having a plan. And they are also people who enjoy the process of accumulating money, but they can be very cheap chip. They can be very, very prudent, very like buy on value. I'm going to buy something. I'm going to keep it forever kind of people. And they tend to think that their way is the best way, the only way. But the cheap chip can also hoard money. They hoard a lot of money. They don't like to part with their money. And they make very slow decisions. And financially, sometimes, especially in timing the market, if you don't make the decision, you'll miss it, right? So that is one personality. And it's so funny how this other personality, this spendthrift personality, they end up attracting each other. I see a lot of marriages where one person's a cheap chip, the other one's a spendthrift. And spendthrifts are very impulsive. Spendthrifts move fast in their life. They're free flowing in energy and very abundant in mindset. So over here, we have the cheap chip that can be scarcity, fearful, all of that. And then we have someone who's like, let's go. Let's be abundant. I can always go out and make more money. I can always make things happen. Do they both have money? Sometimes, sometimes not. But in that conversation in real estate or anywhere with your money, these people can be at odds with each other because this person's judging this person and this person's pissed at this person. The spender's pissed at the non-spender because there's never enough. We can't spend money. We can't take the vacation. We can't enjoy our lives. And this person may not have a lot of money, but they want to enjoy their life. They want to take a vacation. They want to be free. Very different ways of being with money, very different mindsets. And it causes a lot of judgment and conflict. If you see business partners, this happens a lot, where you see a CEO who's a spendthrift and a CFO who's not. We're just out there judging everybody about their decisions. And there's no right or wrong way to do it. It's just all that stress that we cause ourselves, regardless of what our personality is, that causes a lot of conflict in our lives. That's not healthy, but we can get on a journey of embracing who we are. And a spendthrift is really, really good in real estate. Why? A spendthrift is really, really good with flipping homes. Why? Because they like the motion and movement of money. They'll spend other people's money. Like they like it. Like, let's go, you know? Does that help?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm definitely the spendthrift. when it comes to real estate, for sure.
Yeah. Like, hey, we're going to accumulate, we're going to go, we're going to move. And I love that. And cheap tips just take a long time to make decisions. For a spendthrift, it can be very painful to like see that person. And then also there's this tug of war or struggle going on where the cheap tip is like, don't spend, don't spend, don't spend. And then here's what happens. They want to put a budget on it. And spendthrifts hate budgeting. They don't want to do it. But there are ways to track and monitor your money.
Awesome. So we are running out of time. We're to the last three questions of the show. But first, if our listeners want to listen to your podcast or learn more about this, where can they do that?
YouTube. Just go to @LisaChastain. That's my YouTube handle. And I launch shows twice a month. Would love to get to know them. And I have some long form videos, all kinds of content on there.
Awesome. So y'all be sure to check it out.
Yeah.
All right. So last three questions of the show, we ask these to everyone. The first question is, what advice would you give 20-year-old Lisa?
Believe in yourself.
Oh, that's a good one. You know what? Nobody said that yet in 200 episodes.
Yeah. Just believe in yourself.
Good one. Okay. And second, what advice would you give a new real estate investor who's looking to get into the market today? So a little outside your wheelhouse on the real estate side, but it also involves money. So what would your advice be?
These are conversations I have with clients every single day. Know how it's going to support you in your long-term vision for your life. Do the work. Make sure you have the right mentors. Make sure you're learning from people who know how to help you get the result that you want. Don't just chase a dream that isn't yours.
Okay. And I think that last sentence that you said is so important, because there are so many voices out there now telling you what to do, telling you what not to do. And so many times they're not doing the same thing as you. They're not the same type of investor. They're not the same point in their life. They're, you know, and a lot of times, sometimes they just don't know what they're talking about either. But
yeah,
you know, if you put yourself on YouTube, a lot of times people will believe you. So I think that last sentence is especially important. And last question, this one's a little more fun. What is your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
The Soul of Money.
Oh, I never read that one. Who's that?
Lynn Twist.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Soul of Money. All right. Good recommendation. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for coming on. A really interesting conversation. And we look forward to chatting with you again soon. Y'all check her out on YouTube.
Great meeting you. Thanks.